Hello, and welcome to the Atlanta Opera podcast In the Spotlight. I'm Tomer Zvulun, General and Artistic Director of the Atlanta Opera, and we are glad you are here. I'm excited to introduce to you this new initiative. Blink Opera is a new way to engage with the art form that we love so much and the artists who bring it to life. Who better to bring you these stories than the artists who perform them and know them so well? So our premise is simple. We unpack the plot, we sprinkle in the highlights, share some anecdotes in the most time-efficient way. Blink, and it's over. Just 10 minutes. Let's get started.
Hello, and welcome to the final Blink of the first batch. I am your host, Aaron Teachman. As ever, we hope these blinks are an opportunity to spend some time with amazing stories and wonderful music, a reminder for those who know, and a teaser for those who might not know yet, an amuse-bouche when you can't make it out to the theater, wherever and whatever shape that theater takes. We hope you enjoy them, you tell your friends, and you tell us what you think of them. Our singer host is going to introduce themselves in just a moment, but first we have some admin. Admin, I'm actually pretty excited about. Does that sound like an admin? I don't know. This is the Three Penny Opera Blink, and that show is still on the stage as part of the Molly Plague Big Ten series. Our musical excerpts are hot off the digital multi-track recorder from that production, directed by Tomer Zvulun and conducted by Francesco Miliotto. Now, plot twist. Our admin includes a little drive-by dramaturgy this time. Three Penny Opera throws up two challenges for us in the Blink Opera studios. First, a peek behind the curtain. The Atlanta Opera production of a show provides us with our baseline for things like plot and song order. We're using the 1954 Blitzstein translation, the less censored version, if you're curious. But when you dig into the production history of Three Penny Opera, in translation or not, you quickly discover that even Brecht and Weill didn't necessarily do the exact same show twice. So who sings what song, and at one point in the show, is a lot more fluid than it normally would be. And then there is the 10-ton theoretical thud of episches Theater, Gestus, Verfremdungseffekt, the entire theatrical language and concept of Bertolt Brecht, which in its cliffiest of cliff notes versions is that the audience should always be made aware that the time of the action of the show is whenever the audience is watching it, and the place of the action is wherever they are when they are watching it, which is to say that the plot is not really the point, and the songs aren't even about the plot or the characters. So how on earth do you create a summary of a sort of opera where the librettist essentially tells you this is where the singers sing about their characters, not as their characters? They go back to that in the next song, and what the next song is supposed to be is kind of up to you. Well, this is our shot at it. A weighted average approach on that plot song order thing, and this here kind of content warning, as it were. Nothing else to do now but get on with it. So here we go.
Here we go. There we are. We're recording. Yes. All there right. We go.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Let's go ahead and do an introduction.
Hello, my name is Jasmine Habersham, and I am a company player with the Atlanta Opera. You may have seen me sing the role of the girl in Der Kaiser von Atlantis, and also I am currently singing the role of Mikaela in Carmen. I am here to talk to you about the Three Penny Opera. It premiered on August 31st, 1928, in a small theater in Berlin. It wasn't until Leonard Bernstein programmed the revival in 1952 with a new translation by Mark Blitzstein that the show became famous in the American theater canon. The Three Penny Opera was based on John Gay's early 18th century ballad opera, The Beggar's Opera. Ballad operas are these satirical musical plays that use some of the conventions of opera, but without recitative. The lyrics in the piece are set to popular broadsheet ballads, opera arias, church hymns, and folk tunes of the time. Like The Beggar's Opera, Three Penny uses a variety of popular music styles. In the show, Weill mixes jazz, tango, street ballads, church hymns, a jarring mix of styles and genres to go with Brecht's brand new idea of the epic theater. So let's dig into the synopsis. After the overture, a street singer comes on stage with a barrel organ and sings the crimes of the notorious bandit and womanizer, Mac the Knife.
Oh, the shark has pretty teeth, dear, and he shows them pearly white.
Act one begins in the shop of Jonathan Peacham. Mr. Peacham is London's, like, basically he controls the beggars. In a way, he basically equips and trains them in return for a cut of some of their earnings. As he's enrolling a new beggar, with the help of his wife, Mrs. Peachum, they notice that their daughter, Polly, did not come home the previous night. So the scene shifts to an empty stable where McKeith is about to marry Polly. And they are there with the gang, and the gang has stolen all of these expensive furnishings and all of the food to get ready for the wedding. The gang members are sitting down. They're trying to provide some fitting entertainment, which none of them can do. Polly takes it upon herself and sings the rough and turbulent story of Pirate Jenny.
By noontime, the dock is a-swarming with men coming off of the ghostly freighter. They're moving in the shadows where no one can see, and they're chaining up people and bringing them to me, asking me,
kill them now or later?
Asking me, kill them now or later?
The cops show up, giving the bandits a scare, but it is just Tiger Brown, Mac's old army buddy, which Mac is very quick to remind Brown during Cannon Song. Tiger Brown isn't making a social call, though. There is a coronation coming, and he wants Mac's assurance that he and his gang aren't planning anything that would disrupt it. Mac is so happy to do so, but also wants to make sure, because he knows exactly what Mr. Peachum thinks of him, that there's no evidence on him that could put him in jail. Tiger tells him it's all been taken care of. Polly returns home and announces to her parents that she has consummated her marriage to Mac the Knife. Her parents are, of course, very upset. And in response to that, she sings Barbara Song, also known as a song of yes and no. After Polly sings, Polly accidentally reveals Mac's ties to Tiger Brown, which gives Mr. and Mrs. Peachum the idea to find a way how to snare Mac the Knife. Brecht then breaks the fourth wall. This is a method he often uses to achieve the alienation effect. The actors step outside of the characters. They give a chance for the audience to meditate on what just happened to the characters in the scene. And that is the end of Act 1. So at the beginning of Act 2, Polly tells Mac that her father will have him arrested. So Mac makes arrangements to leave London, explaining his bandit business to Polly so that she can manage it during his absence. And he departs, and Polly instantly takes charge over the gang. Mrs. Peachum then arrives at the whorehouse to bribe Jenny, which is one of Mac's old lovers, to turn him in. She knows men like Mac all too well, as she demonstrates during the Ballad of Sexual Dependency, which ends, sure enough, with Mac entering the whorehouse to visit Jenny. Jenny and Mac reminisce about their time as a couple during the tango, or Pimp's Ballad.
We had a love by day, and don't you smirk.
The nights, they say, are strictly meant for work. It's better at night, they say. Oh, but it ain't bad by day.
As Mac is strolling down memory lane, Jenny takes the opportunity to signal the cops. The cops arrive, led by a man known only as Smith, to arrest Mac and take him to jail. He attempts to bribe the guard to remove his handcuffs, reminding him that bulging pockets make life easy in Ballad of the Easy Life. Lucy Brown, who is the daughter of Tiger Brown, arrives to complain about Mac's unfaithfulness to her. Polly meets Lucy, and then Lucy reveals that she is also, or actually, Mac's wife. They sing out their disagreement in the jealousy duet. Polly leaves. And Mac the Knife then convinces Lucy to help him escape. Mr. Peachum drops by the jail and is quite upset to discover that Mac is no longer there. To hurt Tiger Brown, Mr. Peachum threatens to flood the streets with all of his beggars and utterly ruin the upcoming coronation day, which would destroy Brown's career as corrupt police chief, forcing Brown to once again betray his old army friend. Brecht blasts through the fourth wall again as Lucy and Max step down stage to sing the second Threepenny finale, How to Survive. And that's the end of Act 2. At the beginning of Act 3, Ginny comes to the Peachum shop to demand her money, which Mrs. Peachum refuses to pay. A desperate Ginny accepts much less from the exasperated Mr. Peachum, only to whisper Mac's new location to him. Brown rushes out to Beggar's friend, determined to arrest Peachum and the beggars, but he is far too late. Mr. Peachum's beggars are already in place throughout the city, and they will head out if they don't hear from him. Mr. Peachum taunts Brown with his failure to get ahead of the problem while singing the useless song.
Says people ain't much good, just come on the hood. And though you hear them good and hard, they're never out for good. Useless, it's useless, our kind of life's too rough. Take a baby, it's useless, you're never rough enough.
Brown asks, how could he possibly arrest Mackie if he doesn't know where he is? In response, Peachum prompts Ginny, and she reveals to Brown that he is sheltering at yet another whorehouse. A different one this time. Brown sends Smith out to get Mac again. The curtain falls, and Ginny steps downstage and reflects on Mac's fall during Solomon's song. Back in jail, Mac frantically tries to put a bribe together in his first call from the grave. But the gang, who now answers to Polly, refuse to help him. He struggles to accept his fate as he calls from the grave yet again. He soon stops resisting and asks the assembled friends and enemies to forgive him a bit in what he thinks is his epitaph. Mackie is then taken to the gallows. At the very last possible moment, marking the third Threepenny finale, a messenger on horseback arrives, occasionally played by the same actor as Tiger Brown, who announces that McKeith has been pardoned by the Queen, granted a castle, and a pension. During this finale, the cast reminds the audience that happy endings aren't handed out like that in real life. And you should go home and think about that. Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to me chat about the Threepenny Opera. I really hope that you will come and check us out and see our production here at the Atlanta Opera.
And there you have it, our Sum Over Paths version of a Threepenny Opera synopsis. At time of release, we have just finished up the Spring Big Ten series, an incredible run for our Threepenny Opera and our Threepenny Carmen. The good news is that, like Pagliacci and Kaiser von Atlantis before them, these shows are destined for the streaming platform, Spotlight Media. We'll put those films out as soon as we are satisfied that they are as good as they can be, which is a long way of saying there is no release date yet. But if you don't want to worry about dates, you can pre-order them at stream.atlantaopera.org right now. The Atlanta Opera is a nonprofit organization. If you are interested in supporting our artists and our company, please consider a donation today. Thanks for listening. Ciao.